This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There are crimes that make you angry, and then there are cases that make you lose faith in the entire idea of justice. In Stillwater, Oklahoma, Jesse Butler was charged with 11 felonies, SA, attempted SA, S battery, and assault and battery by strangulation after attacking two 16-year-old girls. One victim was choked unconscious. The other needed neck surgery. That's how bad it was. Doctors said seconds longer, she would have died. Police even found partial phone video showing the assault because he wanted to tape it. What kind of evidence, or with that kind of evidence, you'd expect decades behind bars. Far-reaching penalties and punishments that would never leave this man's path. Instead, the system gave him mercy. Butler entered a no contest plea, meaning he didn't admit guilt but accepted conviction because he was 17 at the time. His lawyers argued he qualified as a youthful offender, and the judge agreed. 78 years were suspended. He'll serve 1 year of supervision, no prison, no record that follows him into adulthood. Except for YouTube videos and coverage like this. 11 felonies, 1 year. That's not rehabilitation. That's privilege masquerading as compassion. And what makes it worse is how easily everyone around him, family, officials, the community, just seem to accept it. The mother's body cam quote said it all. "I'll get you out," she said. And she did. So today we are asking, how does this happen? How do parents, courts, and communities learn to protect the predator instead of the people he's hurt? Joining us, psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott, here to break down the psychology behind denial, privilege, and misplaced empathy, and why these patterns keep letting violence and violators walk free. Siobhan, as always, thank you for being here. This is one of those cases where you just get so tense. At least I do. I mean, I felt it just even getting through the introduction to this. And we're going to talk about all different aspects of this today. But I want to start here. And I think one of the bigger aspects of this case, sometimes it gets lost in the weeds a bit, but it's important because it really, I think, gets at the psychology and the root of some of this. When someone strangles another person until they lose consciousness, that's not impulsive, that's control. What does this tell us about the offender's mind? Let's start there.
Yeah, strangling should not be looked at as a red flag. It is a blaring siren for someone who is very likely to commit homicide in the future. And we know that without a doubt. Half of the women who are killed by partners at some point in the past had been strangled, and then they went on to be murdered. So you can't find anything that's a more dangerous sign than someone who engages in that kind of behavior. So it's someone that, yes, is into domination, control, humiliation. They've linked arousal to someone else's pain and terror. So we're talking about a sadistic psychopath here. And it doesn't matter if they're 16 or 26 or 36, this is an ingrained part of who they are.
It really is. I mean, that it's always been something to me that I'm always like, why would somebody like this? I don't know. I mean, everybody's got their things, but it goes beyond a kink. Unfortunately, yeah. The reality is today in so much of the things that young men will consume with porn online and such, it's the norm. It's a common thing. It's like, this is how we do it, to borrow some words from Montel Jordan. Although I don't think this is what he meant by this is how we do it. The things that these young boys are seeing and then basically imprinting into their brains and then going out there and acting on, I'm wondering, in a case like this where he is 17 years old, when they're saying these sort of things online, do they even know why they like them or if they like them, or are they just repeating what they're seeing and thinking, well, this is how we do it?
I think it has a lot to do with at what age they're seeing stuff like this. And yes, we're talking about kids that are 6 and 8 year olds that are having unsupervised time on the internet and are seeing just shockingly violent content. And not all kids are going to obviously watch stuff like this and go out and repeat it. But if you have somebody who has some genetic vulnerabilities, they're wired differently, and then at critical points in their sexual development, they're exposed to this kind of porn, yeah, they imprint. It imprints in them. And that's how they pair the arousal with that kind of sadistic aggression.
I mean, how dangerous is that? I mean, is that taking what may be a brain that wouldn't necessarily go down that path, down that route of this is what I mean, let's not make any mistake here. This was rape. So I don't want to, this is not a consensual sexual encounter that we're talking about here. But let's kind of talk more so on the levels where it is more consensual, but this one person wants to do that to somebody else. When it comes to that, and that brain that has seen that and it's imprinted on, the dangers of that happening at such a young age, what I'm getting to, is this something where had they not been exposed to that at such a young age, maybe this would never been part of their repertoire going forward, but because it gets introduced, it is almost some sort of weird backwards trauma almost, that this is now there, and that's a new requirement for them to, you know, get off, essentially.
Yeah. I think it warps their sexual development. And so it's possible to have somebody who maybe was born with some psychopathic tendencies, mm-hmm. but they were never exposed to material like that. So it didn't mm-hmm. go in that direction. And yeah. they might have been someone that never acted out in a violent way if they hadn't have been exposed to it. But kids are really vulnerable when yeah. they're developing their sexual beliefs and ideas and the things that arouse them. And that's, you know, I mean, I hate to come off as a prude, but I am so concerned about the material on the internet.
My God.
What kids are consuming. It's just, it's changing brains. And we're still, you know, the internet, this whole thing is still a fairly new experiment in the long arc of history here. And I don't think we're going to know for a long time exactly the full extent that this is having.
I mean, this has never happened before. So we have nothing to base it on. I mean, there's always been pornography to some extent and things like that, but the level of the vileness of what's out there that is being passed off as this is pleasure, this is that. Right. And then to put that into the mind of someone at that age, I can't contemplate. I can't contemplate what a brain would be like at that young age, and then what it's going to be like at 30 or 40. You know, I mean, if this is what your original programming is, it's not going to end well. I think we all know that. Yeah. Why is this urge to control, to dominate, so often dismissed in kids, especially young boys, this youthful immaturity, when it's actually a red flag for chronic violence?
I think people are really lacking awareness of the issues around power, control, what's healthy male behavior versus, you know, boys are just boys and they like things like that. Families can really have a warped sense of what's normal. I have a cousin who was, as a little girl, was sexually molested in the middle of the night by a teenage, you know, a relative. And when she told her mother, she just said, boys do things like that. Yeah. And that's been quite a few years ago, but we've got, you know, a long history of normalizing aggressive sexual behavior by men. And I think we're doing a lot better talking about it now, but we need to keep talking about it because people do seem overall to still have a lot of ignorance about what's healthy and what's not.
There's a lot we're going to talk about here too, and I'm not jumping to the end, but I'm jumping to an end kind of a chapter of this. The repercussions for this kid, basically, you have to do some counseling. And they went down the rehabilitation route. So what sort of magic do they have going on there in Stillwater, Oklahoma, that's going to rehabilitate this kid that we don't have in every other place of the country? Because I'd love to know what sort of magic is happening there. I mean, what kind of assessment or treatment would actually be needed for rehabilitation of somebody like this, if that's even a possibility?
Yeah. Yeah. I am going to be in the camp, which some people may disagree with me, that true rehabilitation, meaning personality transformation, turning somebody this abnormal into somebody normal, is not possible. Mm-hmm. And certainly outpatient talk therapy once a week in a community setting is not going to touch it. You know, this guy is going to come in, he's going to con, he's going to lie. And there is no magic. Therapists don't have magic. Believe me, I would have fixed the world decades ago if I had that power. But yeah, traditional therapy doesn't change personality. What might have an impact on him being incarcerated in either a prison or a forensic mental health locked facility with an intensive program for sex offenders, where he can be taught to, if motivated, control his urges, not act out on women, to try to maybe get to the root of, why are you so damn angry at women? What is this, you know, what is this all about? And are those programs ever successful? It's questionable. Maybe after enough time behind bars, somebody can learn to curtail their urges. But I think that's the best you can look at. There's not going to be a transformation for someone like this.
What on earth do you think is going through the DA's mind, the judge's mind in a case like this, where, I mean, they had a choice. I mean, they were following the law. They didn't have to go down this route. They didn't have to go down the youthful offender route. It was one of the levers they could have pulled, and they chose to pull it. They could have also chose to pull the trap door that said, you're going away for 78 years, and we're not going to traumatize these girls and make them move out of this city because they're fearing seeing you at Subway and freaking out because they're being re-traumatized every time they have to face your disgusting face. But they didn't. They said, little junior here, his second chance is more important than your trauma. Why? I get why. Is it because they do not see it remotely on reality's terms? But we see this so often where they're giving these young, vile mutants second chances at life. And then the victims are just like, well, good luck. Hope you don't run into them somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty much impossible for me to wrap my head around what in the world are they thinking. Are these people, I'll just say the word, are they stupid? I mean, you know, how ignorant would you have to be to not get this at this point? Because yeah, you use the word re-traumatizing. These victims are re-traumatized by the fact that nothing happened, that nobody has empathy for them. And this is something that they're going to carry for the rest of their lives. And as you say, do they leave town because they're frightened? And it's just, it's horrifying that you would have anybody that would see this as the right call.
I feel like in the Choose Your Own Adventure book of this, there's like three options for what they are. They're either stupid, sadistic, meaning, well, I went through something like this too. And then some people have that, well, you can deal with life too, and we don't care, we'll make it more difficult. And that sort of weird way of thinking that people have about looking at youth and shit like this. Or they're fellow predators. It's like one of the three. And I'm not saying that these people are predators, so nobody mistake that. But I'm saying it could be one of the options. It's probably one of the three. Stupid, sadistic, or a predator.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. And there could also be in a small community this sense of protecting our image. And we don't want to believe that there could be somebody, a member of our community, that's this evil. And so we're just sort of in denial about how awful this is.
I'd probably fall into the stupid category.
That would. I mean, that would.
That would be there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, let's watch this clip first, actually, in case someone has not seen this. This is the clip that really put this case into the spotlight. This is him being arrested on the porch, and it just says so much about the upbringing of this little monster and the bubble wrap to which he is coming out of as mom opens the door with the police and the arrest warrant. Let's take a look.
Here, wallet and phone and stuff. So, okay. You're what?
They're in your car.
Well, okay, it's fine. It's not locked or anything, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, can you tell him what you just told me? Or?
Yeah. So, we're here. We're obviously going to place you under arrest. There's a warrant for your arrest. We're going to take you to the jail. I told your mom that she can contact a bondsman. And you shouldn't be very long, but there just is a process for paperwork and stuff. But right now you do have to come with us, and I do have to put you in handcuffs. So turn around for me.
You have to put him in handcuffs?
I
do. You know
where
he is?
Okay. Do
you have a key?
Yeah. I'll get you out. Okay? All right. Stay silent. Rick knows about this. Candy's on this. Dad's on his way. We're coming to get you, okay? Stay strong, okay? Say your prayers. Okay, so we will. He's going to go right to the city Stillwater Jail, and if you'll just contact her, then she does this all the time. She knows what to do.
Yeah.
Actually,
okay.
She knows Stillwater Police Department, not a county.
Yeah.
Stillwater Police Department. Yeah. On Lewis.
Yeah.
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 Let them know that we're the ones that picked you up.
And let me say we are
Stillwater PD.
Stillwater PD.
Yeah.
Okay.
That way they don't think you went straight over and he's over at the county.
Awful experience. Sorry.
Patch down, spread your feet for me.
I'll get you out. Do you have to put him in cuffs? No one has to know about this, or no one knows about this. Say your prayers.
Say your prayers. That's the one that really got me. Yeah.
Say your prayers. I'm going to be praying that lightning strikes the vehicle on the way and only you are taken out. What is going on psychologically here when a parent is in that type of mode?
This is the kind of parent that produces the cluster B stuff that we're always talking about, the personality disorders. Her baby can do no wrong, and he is a reflection of her good parenting. So how in the world could he ever do anything evil, you know, because it's really all about her. And it's incredible. The other thing that struck me is how big this guy is. And I don't care if he's 17 or 15. You know, one of the awful rape cases I worked with when I was in the Rape Crisis Center was a 13-year-old who was a big 13-year-old. And a woman was jogging around a track at the middle school, in the late afternoon. And this 13-year-old came out of the bushes with a big rock, hit her in the head, crushed her skull. She didn't die, but she was, you know, very impaired afterwards, and raped her at 13. And this was an adult woman. And so it's striking how much mom sees this, you know, 6'5" Hulk as her baby. I mean, it's another bizarre aspect to it. Talk about enabling.
Do you think mom believes the story? Do you think she believes that her son did this deep down? Or is that something where, like we see in so many cases, you just can't process it because it's just too dark, and she in her heart thinks that those girls are lying or something? Yeah. And we can't speak for her. Yeah. This is just, in our opinion, allegedly, whatever you want to say. It's an opinion piece. What do you think is going through her mind? Do you think she's thinking that these girls are picking on my little boy and they're making these horrible accusations against him?
That would be my guess. That would be my best guess, that it's just too threatening. to realize that she has raised a monster, and her denial, as we say, denial can be thick, and mm-hmm. it just kicks in that, you know, he's her angel, and prayer is going to fix him here.
How do denial and the image protection really kind of become form of complicity in something like this?
Very much, very much. Complicity, not only from the parents, but from the whole system, the whole legal mm-hmm. system in that community. I think they're all complicit, and they're all re-victimizing the poor young women.
I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, it seems to be the parents. It seems to be the system. What is going on in this ecosystem that can't accept this child as a violent offender? They're certainly not living in reality on reality's terms. I don't know if they're all just seeing, we saw the picture of him in his, you know, the little boy baseball player, and then he's this, you know, doughboy rape machine monster that is going around, but they seem to still stick over here because this image feels better to them rather than dealing with reality. I mean, what kind of self-talk is going on amongst mom, that's one, but then you get to the greater ecosystem here, the DA, the judge, all these people that are supposed to be the safeguards where they understand internally in a family, that's going to be a hard one to digest. That's going to be a hard one. Then if anybody's going to have some grace of like, well, it's hard to see your loved one as this monster, but in reality they are. So the rest of the system, thank God, normally does to protect the victims. But even there, they're like, well, you know, you got a little too rough that time. I mean, they're treating this like she's, Robin made a good reference the other day. She's treating it like she's losing her dog. Mm-hmm. And she's treating it, and the system is treating it like her dog humped the neighbor's dog. And it wasn't her little boy out there savagely raping and nearly choking out and killing another 16-year-old. It's stunning the way that they're able to frame this in their brains.
Right. I just think it's a community that does not want to look at reality because it makes them look bad. And there's likely a strong undercurrent within the community culture of misogyny and those very traumatic, old-fashioned views of rape, that women who get raped in some way are responsible for what happened and that you can't believe women. And, you know, we see that play out over and over again. And fortunately, I think things have changed a lot. But clearly, you get these pockets of this little social network, which are still very backwards.
Yeah, and they're connecting the dots through religion. I mean, she did it right there. Say your prayers. What the hell is going on in someone's mind? Your son is literally been about to be convicted of doing this. And say your prayers. Walk me through some of the religiosity here that's going through the minds of these people, in your opinion.
Well, it's magical thinking, as we know, and you can take magical thinking in all kinds of directions. And so what I hear with say your prayers is that, you know, God can magically fix this for you. And that is apparently what is happening, although I'm not going to blame God. I'm going to blame misogyny and stupidity for what's mm-hmm. happening. But do they also see that this is just an attack of the devil? Because people who are that concrete with religion, everything bad that happens to them, Satan did it. You know, it wasn't him. It's like the devil is doing this to us. So it's a very childlike way of thinking.
Pray it away.
Pray it away.
Mm-hmm. Pray it away.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.